Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's Thursday. This week is just flying by, and it's, yes, unfortunately, another day without Brad Sesmat. But the good news, you get more of me and this person on the video to my right, your left, Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports. You know, between the two of us, we've each been on the show in a different capacity three times, but this is really the only time we've seen each other face-to-face.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
True. I know.
Three full shows, and this is the first time. It's kind of funny how that works out, but I appreciate you joining us today.
Good to be here.
There's a lot really going on, surprisingly, in the world of sports, especially in the state of Arizona. A familiar name is resurfacing as a possible return to the Suns. And then a familiar name in terms of college basketball is going to be joining us by the name of Lute Olson. That's coming up next segment at 10:20, and then Derek Hall at 10:35 to talk a little Arizona Diamondbacks to get you excited about spring training, which is just maybe a week or two away.
It's a week. The pitchers and catchers report. I can't believe it's that soon.
It's crazy how fast it's all coming. Plus, we'll look at some national things as well. But to get things started, today's top stories brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino, located in the beautiful White Mountains just outside of Pine Top in eastern Arizona. Head on up now. Enjoy ski season before the season ends, and make sure you stay at the Honda Resort and Casino. Off the top, Paula, Paul Coro joined us on the show yesterday. He knows a little bit about the Phoenix Suns, so we talked a little bit about the Phoenix Suns, naturally. There were some interesting conversations we had about where this team currently stands. They are in the eighth spot. They are one game ahead against over the Oklahoma City Thunder and the New Orleans Pelicans, who have, by the way, two of the most special talents in the game itself. And at least one of those teams are going to make the playoffs. Will it be at the expense of the Suns? We don't know. The Suns are in quite the battle. Close games. I think the statistic that I rattled off was they're 2-9 in games decided by 3 points or less this season, and 0-4 in overtime. There's a lot of things kind of ganging up on the Suns that are saying, you know, they've really peaked, and this is about as best as they could do being in that eighth spot, but it's not looking good for the finish.
I'll be stunned if they get into the postseason. I usually have the Pollyanna mentality of things are going to work out. I'm a big believer in Jeff Hornacek. I like what they're doing with management, but you know, there are pieces, but I don't feel like this, that they're necessarily on the same page. And I think when you see teams overachieve, teams maybe that are supposed to make that aren't supposed to make the playoffs do, it's because they have this sort of connectivity and you feel like they're doing things the right way. This still feels like there's guys that are wanting more playing minutes. It feels like, you know, the whole technical issue we've talked about with Marcus Morris, all that stuff going on. It just feels to me like this team, as much as Hornacek is trying to make it that way, is not on the same page, and I think that's going to hurt him down the stretch.
Well, we know what we've seen from a local perspective. Yesterday on the show, Amin El-Hassan, the ESPN front office insider, joined Paul and I on the show, and he talked kind of what the view of the Suns is from a national perspective.
Well, the national perspective is they're a fun team, and they're a good team, and in a regular year, they're a playoff team. But this isn't a regular year. We are not in a regular era of Western Conference basketball. And the truth is, they're not one of the eight best teams in the Western Conference. That's just a fact. Oklahoma City Thunder are a better team. They just gave them a huge head start. And as we've seen in the recent weeks, they've closed that gap. They are now tied in the loss column. And we've got another, 40% of the season to go.
And that's yeah. And he's totally ended a little bit abruptly. Yeah, sorry about that. I was so drawn in by
analysis.
I was yesterday too. But he's right. I mean, gosh, the Thunder have really had few games, if you look at it this season, where they've had Durant and Westbrook on the floor at the same time. And now they're starting to charge a little bit. And if you've watched the Pelicans play, they're a really good team too. The Suns aren't, from a talent standpoint, maybe right now currently from a record standpoint, but they're not, from a talent standpoint, a top eight team in the West. And you're right now in that no man's land, that limbo that you really got to hate at the end of the Steve Nash era, mm-hmm. of being just into the playoffs or outside of the playoffs, but a mid-range draft pick that doesn't get you a game changer at all.
Well, and speaking of changing, something's going to happen. They're going to make a deal, and every day we're hearing something new. One of the things I saw today is they're talking about maybe Goran, trading for a first-round pick, and that one bothers me a little bit because you know, obviously, I think he's sacrificed more than the other guards as far as maybe playing more of that off guard position. But he also seems like the consummate team player and was kind of the one willing to make these adjustments because of all the point guards they have on that team. I don't necessarily know if that would be a good thing there, Jared.
Yeah, I agree. And we briefly hit on this right before the show started. I'd be glad to admit that I was wrong. I was really into that Isaiah Thomas sign. One, because I watched him a ton when he was in college, when he played at Washington. And knowing just by the numbers that the Suns just needed a bench guard to be productive. I mean, they weren't getting that with Ish Smith, even though Ish had some nice games over the course of last season. But that is the role that I envision Thomas being, not overtaking minutes from the Bledsoe and Dragic combination. And that's what's happened. To the advantage of the Suns at times, but really in the grand scheme to the disadvantage. Yes, Thomas is like, what, in the top 10 or 12 in the league in fourth quarter points. I mean, that's a good, cool stat for him.
Sure.
But it doesn't necessarily help the team in the grand scheme of things. And to think that because Dragic is really the only tradable piece out of those three that they're willing to part with, he seems like the odd man out, and I just think that really stinks. That's not the route that I feel like the Suns envisioned going when they brought in Thomas, and I feel like it's almost the only way they have an opportunity to do something with this three-guard situation that just hasn't really worked.
You know, Ryan McDonough as a GM has received a lot of accolades, and fairly so. I think they've done a nice job with the draft, the moving pieces they've had. I think this is going to be a real big measure of where he stands now as far as the moves he's going to make, because they're going to have to do something. Like you said, they're right on the fringe of making the postseason. They've got to do something, but is it going to be enough to keep improving this team? Because bottom line, you know, nobody expects this team to win the title this year. They do want to see improvement from last season. And are they taking a big enough step this season to say it's been a success? I don't think you can say that yet. And that's why I think what happens now with moves and trades is going to be a big measuring stick.
Yeah, that's Paula Bovin of Asia Central Sports. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad today. Just quickly before we go, a team that it seems are starting to click. Do you watch the Cavs last night?
Yeah, I saw some of their game.
That team is starting to click amongst a lot of others in the Western Conference, one being the Rockets that the Suns saw just the other night. So they got to step it up. They're going to have to make some moves, and we're going to talk a little bit more of that over the course of the show. But coming up next, we're going to switch gears a little bit, talk a little college hoops with a legend in this state, Lute Olson, legendary head coach from U of A. He's going to talk to us about all sorts of different things, the passing of two legendary fellow coaches of his, and also a little State of the Wildcats. That's coming up next with Paula Bovin and Jared Cohen filling in for Brad on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports.
Welcome back. This is the Brad Sesmet Show here on Sports 360 AZ. I'm clearly not Brad Sesmet. I'm Paula Bovin. I'm here with Jared Cohen. And, you know, we have some good guests here, some with pretty impressive credentials. It's hard to top the list of credentials of our next guest. Lute Olson, former coach at the University of Arizona, and I think widely considered one of the top college basketball coaches of all time. Lute, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Paula. It's nice having a chance to visit with you.
You know, it's been a rough, I think, couple weeks for college basketball fans, and certainly I would imagine people who have coached with these two, Dean Smith and Jerry Tarkanian, who have both passed away. I'm curious what your relationship was with both of these guys. You're talking about two really different personalities, but what was your relationship like with both?
Well, I'll start with Dean Smith. You know, Dean was an innovator in college basketball. He's the one that started the four corners offense, which really brought on the time clock because no one could stop me. They'd get the ball, and they always had great point guards, and they'd hold the ball for 4 minutes or 5 minutes at a time, and it was difficult to catch up. The other thing, he started using multiple defenses, which really made it difficult for opposing coaches because you never knew whether he was going to be in a zone or full court press or man to man or whatever. And he is the one that originated what they call the run and jump defense, where somebody would be on the man that had the ball, and all of a sudden a guy would sort of blindside that guy and come in and pick him up and release the guy that was defending him to another player. So, but Dean was a great coach and a great gentleman. I don't think you'd find anyone that was more of a gentleman than Dean. I got to know him very well when I worked the Michael Jordan fantasy camp in Las Vegas for a number of years, and Dean was always there, and it gave me a good chance to visit with him. But a first-class gentleman in every way. We played him, I think, five times when I was at Arizona, and actually the last game that he ever coached was at the Final Four in 97 when we had beaten Kansas and we beat North Carolina and then we beat Kentucky, which will never ever be surpassed in terms of beating three number one seeds and in 1 year. A team may be able to tie it eventually, but our players will go down in history for that that achievement.
And I imagine Jerry Tarkanian was quite a different personality, wasn't he?
Yeah, very much so. They were probably as different as you could be. when I got to know Jerry was when I was coaching at Long Beach City College, and he was coaching at Long Beach State, and two of our players, one of whom was really outstanding, opted to go to Long Beach State, and so at that time, having two of your players on his team, where, you know, there were a number of lunches and times that we went out for dinner before we go watch a state high school playoff game or something like that. But then once he left to go to UNLV, I took his job at Long Beach State, and then it became sort of a different situation because I had been told that if I took the job, there would be no probation because I was concerned about it. The NCAA had been hanging around there for about 4 years, and I was told by the administration that there'd be no problem. If I took the job, there wouldn't be any probation. And then I found out later Bobby was at a game and overheard the wives of the people, the administrators, saying that, well, you know, we knew we were going to get probation, but we didn't think it was going to be this long. And what ended up happening was 4 years plus they made two players ineligible that were starters on our team. Eventually they got an injunction and were able to play and won their case against the NCAA. But that was not so such a great situation for me because I took over his team and the probation. And after Bobby hearing that they had known all along they were going to get probation, they wanted me to sign an extended contract, and I just put it off. I said, I don't want to discuss this until the year's over. And then as soon as the year was over, I went back to the University of Iowa, and we didn't play Tark during that time, so there weren't any problems when I got to Arizona. Of course, both of us were, I think we were the top two programs in the West, and we had some very competitive games and some competitive recruiting situations. Tom Talbert, whom I had gone in to see right at the conclusion of the college season, and Tom committed to the University of Arizona, and his parents were there, and they were very happy with his choice. And Tom asked if he could go and make the last visit to UNLV because he had some buddies that wanted to go to Vegas with him and spend the weekend. So I said, fine. And then he got cornered by Tark in his office. And you have to know Tom to know this, but if there's you know, any kind of a conflict, then the best thing to do is just say yes. So he told Tark, yes, I'm coming. And the media was right outside Tark's door, so it was sort of a set-up deal. But then he went from there to Colorado Springs because he was going to be involved in an all-star team, USA junior college players. And Ricky Birdsong and Kevin O'Neill went there, and you know, he, when all was said and done, he signed with us. But I became known as Midnight Loot because I was swooping in at midnight, taking away some of his recruits, and of course, it wasn't true because he had committed to us first. But then, with Matt Offick, of course, he was a Las Vegas kid, Brian Williams, but there was never any question that they were going to come to Arizona. So those things created a little bit of friction, and then we had some very competitive games against one another. And after one of the final games of the series, I was asked whether we were going to renew it, and I said, no, I just think at this point it's better for both of us to go in a different direction. So that was not well taken by Tark nor the fans at UNLV. So anyway, it was a hot and cold kind of relationship. 2 years ago, he was inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame, and Kelly and I were at the dinner, and each person that was inducted was asked to stand and say how much it meant to them to be inducted into the hall. Jerry was there in a walker, and the gentleman with him helped him stand, but he could not talk at that point. So it was a case of where both Kelly and I felt that, boy, the days really, really numbered, and he made it longer than either one of us expected. But he had a tremendous career. Vegas sort of pushed him out after the hot tub thing. You can look up what that was all about.
I remember one, yeah.
Yeah, they had. The three of his key players were in the hot tub with the fixer, he was called. Las Vegas gave him one more year, but then he was going to have to move on at the end of that. So he went to the, I guess it was San Antonio, and in the pros, and that didn't work out very well. I think probably 27 games into the season he was let go there, and then ended up in Fresno, which is his hometown.
Well, fortunately, Luke, we never saw the hot tub pictures of you going around the internet. So that you've had that good kind of career where that hasn't been an issue. I know you still watch a lot of U of A basketball. They're coming off that tough loss to Arizona State. I think some fans are worried. Does this mean that they're not going to be as good of a postseason team as people hoped? What did you feel about that?
Well, I think that loss really hurt them, and of course, the other two losses at UNLV and up at Oregon State, none of those three teams are listed very high in the RPI. And I think the loss at ASU will knock them off being seated as the number one. I think Gonzaga will go number one from the West, that means that we'll probably play our first game in the West, but then I think we'll be assigned to, you know, the Midwest or the South or Southeast or the East after that. So it's gonna be a much more difficult go than what they had a year ago. So I'm concerned, just as I'm sure a lot of the Wildcat fans are.
legendary U of A head coach Lute Olson joining us. Coach, you obviously brought in some incredible point guards during your time over the years. I'm wondering where you see TJ McConnell stacking up as in the group of great point guards that have worn a Wildcat uniform.
Well, I think TJ is recognizing at this point that he has to shoot more and score more because we're not a very good outside shooting team. And so I think his performance at ASU was what it's going to take, that kind of effort where he knows, and I saw his comments in the paper afterwards, that he knows he's going to have to shoot more and be more involved offensively. But he's really a good player. And the other thing I like about Sean's recruits, they're all really high-character young men, and of course, that was always our feeling that you start with good people, they'll find a way to be successful. And if you go with bad kids, why, they're going to destroy your program. So I think Sean has done a great job of recruiting the right type of kids.
You talked about guys with good character, and I know that they've been happy with Stanley Johnson down at U of A, but he definitely came in as a guy who was maybe freestyling a little bit, not quite playing within the team parameters. He seems to have made great strides in that area. What do you think is the most important thing for Stanley Johnson to do to help Arizona down this final stretch?
Well, I think the thing that you talked about is really obvious to me. I thought he was very much looking for himself in the first part of the season, in the non-conference part, but he's really adjusted very well now to to giving up the ball. But I think just like I do with McConnell, I think Stanley has to recognize that he has to be one of the top scorers game in and game out, and one of the top rebounders game in and game out, and stop making some of the turnovers he's making, get the ball to the point guard and let the point guard handle it going down the court. So, but Stanley has, I think, really made great improvement. I haven't seen any of this. It's all about me. In the last month, he's really adjusted well to playing within the team structure.
One more before we let you go, Coach. We appreciate you joining us. Jason Terry getting his jersey retired next week. Just curious if you have any a great Jason Terry story for us as we lead into exciting week it will be for him and the Wildcat fans out there.
Well, I have two stories that I think are really quite unique. that year that we won the national title, Miles had been ineligible by Board of Regents rules, not by the NCAA and rules. So Miles had to sit out the first semester, and when he came back, I brought him off the bench for a couple games. And so Jason Terry came in to see me, and he said, Coach, we've got to get Miles back in the starting lineup. And I said, yeah, but we can't take Mike Bibby out. He's a freshman. It'll destroy his confidence. Michael Dickerson had a very personality was such that if we had made the move of putting him on the bench, that would have created problems in his confidence, because the confidence was really thinly veiled. And so I said, JT, to JC, I said, well, what's the, who are we going to put on the bench? And he said, well, put me on the bench. He said, I'd like to come in as a sixth man. And I think he knew that he was going to be in the game the last 10 minutes for sure. He wouldn't start the game, but he'd finish the game a long time. And then another one, we went to his graduation ceremony this last in May, and then we had dinner with he and all his family up at the Bocce restaurant in the foothills, and so we were just talking, and all of a sudden he stood up and said, Coach, check this out. And he had his gown on, and his, you know, dress shoes, and he had his long cat socks.
Nice.
You know, he wouldn't play without those on. But I thought that was JT. He's one of my. I mean, there have been great young men playing during the time that I was here, and none better, I think, than Jason Terry. And he's gone on to the NBA and represented the U of A so well that I'm just thrilled for his jersey to be retired.
Thank you, Lute. It's always great catching up with you. We appreciate you taking the time.
Okay, you're welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Coach. That's Lute Olson joining us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Coming up next, another legend in these parts, the president and CEO of the Diamondbacks, Derek Hall. We're going to get pumped up for spring training. Lots of stuff around the Diamondbacks to get us ready. We're going to talk to him about all that. That's coming up right after a quick break. That's Paula Bova, AZ Central Sports. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
Jared Cohen and Paula Bovin filling in for Brad Sesmatt today. The unhealthy Brad Sesmatt. We hope he's having a speedy recovery and gets back in this chair very soon. It's been too long without him. So Paula, just when we have an opportunity to maybe put our feet up a little bit post bowl season, NFL playoffs, Super Bowl, Waste Management Open, all of a sudden here comes baseball knocking on the door, and there's no better way to get excited and get motivated and get pumped that baseball is going to be back and spring training is going to be back around the corner than to be joined by the president and CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Derek Hall. Derek, thank you so much for joining us and taking time out of your day. This is Paula and Jared. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Good to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. It's great to have you. Now, Derek, I want to jump right off the bat. I want to get us just pumped and excited about the pitchers and catchers reporting and the spring training getting underway. From your perspective, two or three storylines that have you just absolutely pumped that spring training is back?
Well, you know, first off, just excited and pumped that spring training is back. You know, for me, and having been in this game almost 25 years, you know, that's the best time of the season for me, when you get back out here and we're already at Salt River Fields and you smell the grass and hear the bat every day because we've got most of our guys already here working out, and the popping of the mitt, it's fantastic. And then you look at some of the storylines, as you referred to, Jared, we've just got so much competition here when it comes to, you know, to catcher, to starting pitching. Amazed at the fact that we have such a strong bullpen, yet we're going to have to finesse it because we have quite a few guys coming back from Tommy John. And you look at the outfield now with so many guys that are going to be competing, the Cuban players that we brought over, where do they fit? Is Monty Tomas going to be ready for opening day? He's got tremendous power and upside. Is he going to be an outfielder? Is he going to be a third baseman? So many questions to be answered.
You know, it is so interesting with baseball. I swear, more than any other sport, when spring comes, you just kind of forget about what happened last season, and there's that excitement. And I'm curious for you, what you saw in the off season from Chip Hale. I know once the season starts is where it really matters, but what kind of guy was he in the off season, and where were his priorities?
Paula, he was unbelievable. I mean, he lives in Tucson, yet you wouldn't have known that because he came up here as soon as the season was over. And he and his wife have been up here every day. He's been in the office at Salt River Fields every day. He's been in uniform every day. He's got so much enthusiasm and passion for this team. He's a teacher. He's a motivator. It's everything that we saw in the interview. It's what we saw when he was our top managerial prospect, when he was our AAA manager here years ago. I mean, this is a guy who is a winner, and players love to play for him, and we've seen it every day. You know, he's had that same attitude, that same passion, that same energy every day here at Salt River Fields, and it's just infectious. And I think he's going to be a huge success. He always has been, every step along the way. And he's got the proper pedigree, having worked under Bob Melvin, who we have tremendous respect for. And as you may recall, I hired Bob back as a special assistant and only had him for a few months before Billy Beane called me and said, hey, can we talk to him about manager? And I thought, that's one I want to say no to. But we let him go, and of course he had the proper mindset to make Chip his bench coach, and Chip's been ready. And so I think, going into the spring, people are going to be eyes wide open watching him, but I think our players are going to love to play for him as they always have.
Let's dive deep a little bit deeper on some of the things that you mentioned, some of the storylines coming in, starting with the starting rotation, a lot of different routes, opportunities that the team can go in to have that five-man rotation. A couple names that I'm just very curious about as pitchers and catchers are about to report. The first being Patrick Corbin, how things are going with his rehab and what the outlook is on him. And the second, Jeremy Hellickson is a guy I'm really intrigued about. Was so good just a few years back, one of the top pitchers in the AL. He's battled injuries, and it's kind of been a rocky road since, getting a fresh start with the Diamondbacks. Those are two guys I'm very intrigued going into spring training.
Well, probably the right names to ask about, because you're looking at a guy that was arguably the ace of his staff, especially as a rookie over in Tampa, and then you've got a guy who was definitely the ace of our staff and went down just before opening day last year. So, I mean, Patrick's doing great. He's right on schedule. He feels better than he probably should, because these guys just want to push it a little more, and we're trying to hold them back because we do have so much depth. We were talking about it yesterday, and you look at what we've tried to create with depth and with competition and starting pitching. You know, it's no secret that you're going to win with starting pitching and defense. If you play the game the right way, and that's really the way Tony La Russa teaches it, and Chip just completely buys in, but it's max effort every day. It's playing the game the right way, giving 100%, not just lip service, but really playing the game that way. Then you can beat teams with the proper pitching if you're going to inch them out in through pure effort. So we looked at it and we said, boy, I mean, you look at with Cole Minter, who got back in that starting rotation, how valuable is he, whether he's in the bullpen or a starter? But he's such a good starter for us because he's reliable. You look up each game and go, boy, he's in the seventh inning. He's only given up one or two runs, each and every start. Jeremy Hellickson, as you mentioned. Ruby De La Rosa. We talked about Alan Webster, who was part of that trade with De La Rosa from Boston as well. Trevor Cahill coming back. We hope we see the Trevor Cahill that we saw 2 years ago. Robbie Ray, who's a guy who was part of that three-way trade when we moved Didi to the Yankees. This guy's come out here and just dazzled everybody. He's lighting up the radar gun. He looks as good as he's ever looked in his professional career, according to our scouts. He may be, the find of the offseason. You've still got Nuno. You got Chase Anderson. Yoan Lopez, the kid we signed from Cuba. And then, of course, the young phenoms that we have with Bradley, Blair, Shipley, Chafin. And we haven't even mentioned Corbin or Arroyo yet coming back from injury, but you can't because we don't expect them to come back till June or July. But when you have 12, 13, 14 guys that are going to compete for five spots, we've never been in that position. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I think that's going to make spring training all that much more entertaining this season because of the competition. Let's move from arms to bats a little minute. I wanted to talk about your lineup and who's going to be the guy that's protecting Paul Goldschmidt. How do you see that all playing out?
Well, just having guys back healthy, it's certainly going to help. We're not as heavy left-handed as we were in the past when we did have, Miguel Montero who could certainly provide that middle of the lineup left-handed bat. But we do have enough power and enough bats around him. When you, of course, Goldie is at the forefront of the middle of that lineup. But when you've got guys like, Aaron Hill who could come back healthy, Yosmani Tomas, as I had mentioned, if he makes the opening day staff, he's definitely going to provide protection. And then some of the outfielders. I mean, A.J. Pollock, you could bat him first, you could bat him second, you could bat him fifth. He's got power, he's got speed, he's just a five-tool player. Mark Trumbo, that's a guy who we signed last year hoping that traded for that we were hoping would provide that protection for Goldie. And when you saw him healthy in the lineup at the beginning of the season and at the end, we saw the glimpses of who Mark Trumbo really is. So if he comes in here and provides us with a lot of health and we can see him out there in the lineup each and every day, he'll provide that. And then you've got guys like Inciarte and Peralta who got on base. I'm not so worried about the offense, as I was in the past. I'm more worried about the health factor because that's really what hurt us last year.
You know as well as anyone, as we're talking about the president and CEO of the Diamondbacks, Derek Hall, that we love local angles and stories, and there might not be a better one around spring training with the Diamondbacks than Tuffy Gosiewicz right now. He's going to get his opportunity, Horizon High School, ASU. He's going to get his shot. How do you think things – what's the outlook on him from a front office perspective, and what's his attitude been like?
Well, Jared, that's probably been the big focal point for, the media nationally, and rightly so. They're wondering who's going to catch for the Diamondbacks. And we like the fact that we do have Tuffy. I mean, this is somebody who our pitchers love to pitch to. I mean, they're very comfortable with him because he never takes his bat out behind the plate. He cares more about his defensive effort than he does his offense, and you just love him. He knows his pitchers. He knows the opposing batters, and he's always been a backup, so now he's got a chance to be the everyday guy. That's exciting for him, and he's certainly durable enough to be able to last an entire season. But we're also excited about the young man that we got in the Rule 5 draft, who's Venezuelan, Oscar Hernandez. This guy, you know, has been compared to great catchers just the way his approach looks and his hands and his defense and his arm. I mean, this guy's got tremendous potential, but he's never been above single A. You know, but the skill sets are there. They convinced Tony and Dave to go after him. And you know how Rule 5s work. I mean, if it doesn't look like he's going to make our squad, you can either work a deal for him or it's just a matter of money.
I remember when you guys got him, it was compared to Yadier. Does that have Tony pretty fired up?
It does have him excited. And I hate to put that sort of a comparison on a kid. You know, you're talking about probably the best defensive catcher in the game, but anytime that name is mentioned, Tony does light up for sure. And then we've got the other kid that we traded in the Prado trade with the Yankees last year that KT did, for Peter O'Brien, and this kid is really exciting to us. I mean, this is a future potential 25, 30 home run guy, tremendous power. He's been working with Glenn Sherlock every day on his catching and his receiving. He looks really good. So I think it's going to be fun this spring, as Paula mentioned with the starters, to watch these catchers battle it out to see who makes our final 25.
Jared Cohen, Paula Bovin filling in for Brad Sesmat. We are talking to Derek Hall, who, by the way, has a chat today. It's on your Twitter account, right, Derek?
It is, yeah. You know, we like to move it around. Sometimes it's through MLB.com, sometimes dbacks.com. We've tried it on Twitter. We've tried it on Facebook. We've actually done it on Instagram. And today it's on Twitter again. So through, you know, hashtag DHallChat or through my account at DHallDbacks. Look forward to it once a month, and today it is Twitter.
Yep, at 2 o'clock today.
Right.
I wanted to ask you, one of the issues facing baseball has been sort of speeding up the game, and I know Rob Manfred, the new commissioner, has talked about that. If I remember correctly, there were some things that were sort of tried out during Fall League. Where do things stand with that?
Well, and they're going to be extended. Yeah, there's going to be some timers used, some clocks used at AAA, and I think that's smart, you know, to speed up the game. I would never want to see us. I'm a traditionalist in a lot of ways. I mean, there's been talk of, do you make it a 2-2 count to start? I don't think that's right. You know, do you make it a 7-inning game? Obviously, that's not right either. If you look at the if you look at all the records and the players that have played 9 innings, I'm not sure that's the answer. But I like what we've attempted, you know, in getting guys maybe to stay in the box. I mean, you'll talk to some who will say, I don't like that. You know, just let guys step out, quickly get back in. But the fact that we're so focused on speeding up the game is important. Today's day and age where kids have so many different options and their minds are everywhere and racing, you know, you want to keep that game 3 hours or less. So when you start to creep, especially in the American League, into 320, 330, 340, that's problematic. So the more that we can do and try out at the minor league level first and see if they work, I've got absolutely no problem in eventually making them work as well on the major league level.
Finally, Derek, before we let you go, we appreciate you joining us. Yeah, we look at the NL West as a whole. I mean, shooting in basketball, the Western Conference is as tough as they come, and football, the NFC West is as tough as they come. In baseball, we have the World Series champs, the Dodgers will be back, and now look what the Padres have done this offseason. Just the outlook overall of this division is just, it looks like it's going to be a gauntlet as much as ever.
It is, and I actually love that. You know, this is a division where in the past it didn't get a lot of respect, and now everybody's looking at the West as the division to be in and the division to beat, because you've got the Giants who somehow, it seems like every other year, because it's true, you know, win the World Series, they find a way to do it, they've got a great manager, they play, you talk about that max effort, they show that each and every year. You got the Dodgers with the payroll, certainly they continue to improve. They're always going to be tough. Now the Padres have made so many moves. I think it's great. You know, I think it's good for us. It's good for the game. And the years that we've had a lot of success is when we've had the least expectations and the lowest expectations, and that's how we perform best. So if we're going to win, we're going to have to beat those guys, and we performed pretty well in the NL West last year until the injuries just overcame us.
Absolutely. Derek, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. Again, Twitter chat today at DHallDbacks. Make sure you check that out, 2 p.m. on Twitter, correct?
Yeah, it is correct. Thank you, Paula, Jared. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. That's Derek Hall, the president and CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks. More on the Brad Sesmat Show. Paula Bovin and Jared Cohen filling in for today. Tiger Woods makes a big announcement yesterday. We'll get into that next on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Last segment here, Paula Bovin, Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat here today. And we've talked a lot of Diamondbacks, a lot of basketball with the Suns and the Wildcats, getting to talk to Coach Olson. Now it's just going to switch gears a little bit to Tiger Woods. The news came down yesterday that he is going to be taking an indefinite leave of absence. He mentioned that he hopes to play in the Honda Classic, which is slated for the end of this month.
Right.
But it sounds like he's going to be out a lot longer than that. You and I had the opportunity to follow him around quite a bit. Just just a couple days ago.
Yeah,
things
really
kind of flying by, but it was a couple weeks back at the Waste Management Open. He had a really laid back, I'm chill, I'm cool, I'm excited to be back type of vibe. And it's just when we saw him on that Tuesday and Wednesday leading up to mm-hmm. the first tournament, you just had no clue that it would transpire like this within a week of that happening.
No, in fact, I interpreted it as almost maybe he saw something positive and he was feeling really confident. And I think he was. And, you know, for me, Jared, I'm that classic person. If he was on TV playing in a tournament, I watched it. It was like must-see appointment TV for me. And I love to watch golf, but there was always the promise when Tiger Woods was on the course of something great happening, and you wanted to be part of it. And so I feel bad for the PGA just because I think he brought so many people to the sport to watch it. And selfishly, I feel bad for me as a golf fan because I want to see him more.
Yeah, and there's great young stars coming up on the Open that if you're a golf fan, you've gotten to know pretty well. But the casual fan probably couldn't name, you know, some of the top 10 guys that are out there right now. I mean, maybe outside of Tiger and Phil, they can maybe name Bubba Watson. And then after that, you know, they might struggle. And whether that's a problem, a PGA problem, or an us problem as consumers. I know I watch more golf than just a casual fan, but it's unfortunate because a Tiger is either you love him or you hate him. But no matter what everyone could agree upon was what he did in his prime and what he was able to do was just about as close to must-see TV as there was, like you talk about. And it is unfortunate because you don't want to see one of the greats ever, if not the greatest ever. I mean, he probably won't go down like that statistically, but you hate to see him go out like this, where he is just the opposite of on top of his game, missing cuts. I think I saw the statistic in his last 8 tournaments, he's missed the cut 3 times and he's withdrawn 3 times.
Right.
You hate to see a guy like that go out like this. And the question starts to loom is, did we see the last of Tiger here the last couple of weeks?
It's sad if that's the case, because I think we're all hungry for more. You know, you mentioned sort of his personality and the guy we've seen lately has been upbeat. You know, he had that funny line about, the Marshawn Lynch line when he was there. I'm only talking to you guys or whatever because the NFL's making me. I wonder, too, when you look back at Tiger at his best, there was always a, I don't know if it was arrogance, but anybody in the position that he's in, you have to be completely self-absorbed, I think, at times. To be really successful, I think the most elite athletes are pretty self-absorbed. Probably led to his downfall, a lot of the stuff that happened off the course. That was definitely sort of missing from him these last, you know, few months as far as who he was projecting and being nice. And I don't know if you have to be that, but it seems like a lot of who Tiger was is not around anymore.
It's very bizarre. And one thing that is kind of, because it's easy to see him withdrawing from the tournament last weekend and thinking to yourself, oh, he's injured again, his body just can't hold up. He also withdrew because he said that his game just isn't where it's supposed to be at. And seeing him shoot was an 82 or an 83 on that Friday, which was horrible conditions at the Open. I want to make sure everyone knows that the average golfer is lucky to shoot in the 80s on a sun-shining, perfect day, and he shot that on a terrible day out there. It kind of puts it all in perspective for us. But he wants to get his game back.
Right.
And at this point, how much time does he have left to really get his game back?
Well, yeah, he's, what, 39 now, I think.
He's pushing 40, yeah.
Yeah, that's tough to sort of be back at the peak of your game at that time. I'm curious what's going to happen if he doesn't return. what's going to happen to the PGA? Obviously, tournaments like the Phoenix Open are going to be fine. They haven't had Tiger for years, and no one cares. But you look at sort of what had happened to men's tennis over the years. During that time, there was McEnroe, and then there was Boris Becker, and the men's tennis game was at its peak. Are we going to see a little bit of that with the PGA, or do you feel like there's enough young stars that it'll change? I don't know.
It's hard. You know, Jason Day.
Right.
Plays a lot like Tiger.
Right.
I mean, he's not Tiger.
Sure.
I mean, he's not going to be this elite kind of like polarizing figure, but he hits the ball very hard and hits it very far and hits some incredible shots. He's had a great last couple of years. Jordan Spieth, 21 years old, has bursted out onto the scene. Ricky Fowler has come from being kind of this like caricature of a golfer, kind of the young new age look, to being actually a very good golfer on tour. And Rory McIlroy is spectacular. I think there just needs to be that American polarizing right. figure that bursts onto the scene. I don't know if these guys are one of those. I don't know if there needs to be some sort of cross promotion with some of these golfers being a little bit more into pop culture and things like that. That's a lot to ask. I don't know. It's a tough one. One thing I do have for you, though. So, side note, Robert Allenby in the Robert Allenby case, a suspect was brought into custody. Were you at that press conference?
I wasn't. I followed the reports afterward.
Oh my gosh, that was seriously one of the weirdest things I've ever been a part of in my entire life.
Was it uncomfortable, or was
so
it just
so uncomfortable and weird and
yeah.
like awkward and looking at the sky and gosh, yeah. it was really weird. So I can't even begin to talk about it. Paula, thank you so much. We appreciate you being such a helpful support system while Brad's been out this week. It's been
happy
awesome.
To do it. Great
That's
to
Paula
be here.
Bovin. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad today on Sports360AZ.com. and AZ Central Sports.